I would just remind everybody that we do have two other committee meetings that we need to conduct, and I am about to open the Operations Committee meeting, so if my colleagues from ABAG are more than welcome to observe our deliberations, but otherwise, with your consent, I guess is not the right word, but I'm just going to start this meeting, just so you know. And you can exit gracefully left or right, however you wish. Okay. This is the Operations Committee. I'm Jake McKenzie. I'm the chair of the Operations Committee. Do we have a quorum of the committee?
Yes, we have a quorum.
Okay, we have a quorum. We have a consent calendar. There's a matter under consent that I'm going to ask that we pull consent calendar item 2C, which is MTC resolution number 4171, Transit Emergency Service Contingency Fund Policy and Guidelines. You will find in front of you this morning a slightly revised version of the resolution that was in the package. And I would also state that I have a card dealing with 2C. Clarence Fisher has asked to address us on this matter. So, Mr. Fisher, if you would come forward and address us on item 2C. Sorry? Oh, yeah, okay. And we're at the request of Commissioner Liccardo, we're going to pull 2B as well, just for the hell of it. So, okay, Mr. Fisher.
Hi. For the record, my name is Clarence Fisher. What I am concerned about is how the actual emergencies shall be instated and worked out. The reason why I'm concerned about this is, for example, in the past, there have been like emergencies on BART, on Caltrain, where BART has fully accepted free passage between downtown San Francisco and the Millbrae station so that they can move patrons to and from Millbrae, so Caltrain patrons can go down between Millbrae and San Jose. However, a few months ago, I was on a situation where BART had to close down between Bayfair and Fruitvale. When BART first opened, AC Transit ran an 89 route that was called the BART Emergency Service. Its only stops were at BART stations to essentially move people very quickly from, you know, a place to a place. When BART recently had that breakdown and AC Transit said, okay, we will try and supplement the service, what they actually did was they just designated the route 1R, although it is a rapid service, according to AC Transit. It still took a lot of time to move between Bayfair and Fruitvale and downtown Oakland because it was making all the stops in between. What I would hope, as you look at the funding for this emergency service, that it would be worded in such a way where if buses or other things are in place to move people from point A to point B, that it would try to move people in the most rapid time, just to speak, to be considered. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. If I could ask staff briefly to address the fact that we did have a slightly revised resolution in front of us, and then I'll bring it back for a vote.
If you could
introduce yourself, please.
Noah Tunick, MTC's Emergency Management Coordinator. The California Office of Emergency Services conducted a last-minute review of the memo and resolution number 4171 before you and recommended a minor edit due to a FEMA policy that prohibits federal reimbursement if an organization states that funds will only be available if FEMA does not reimburse for any associated costs in a disaster. So staff at Cal OES advised this may be flagged by an audit team and in a state-declared disaster, and as such, staff have made a very minor edit to the memo.
Thank you. And I believe this action is taken coincidental with action that was taken on Wednesday. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And also, I would ask that you take into account Mr. Fisher's comments that he made in front of us.
Yeah, so I think that could be addressed most precisely in the mutual aid agreement that MTC helps manage for the transit operators. And in that agreement, it provides equipment, personnel, supplies, and other goods and services to each other during emergency conditions so that transit services experience minimal disruption.
Thank you. And I would just note here that we do anticipate by the month of May or the month of June a broader discussion in front of this committee on matters dealing with emergencies. So all of that being said, I would entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 4171.
Second.
Okay. Liccardo moved. Halstead seconded. I'm doing this because I've been requested by staff to identify the makers of the motion and the second, and evidently I please staff by so doing. We are going, in fact, to be moving to a much spiffier method of conducting our meetings, I understand, but for the interim, this is the way we roll. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? Nobody's opposed. Thank you very much. Thanks for the report. Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Mr. Liccardo, you had pulled 2B, second quarter safe financial statements.
Thank you. Just a question for staff. I know we've talked about this before. I raised the issue about our ongoing investment in the call box program with the understanding that I had that we're really winding down this investment in some way. I'm looking at the numbers now, and it looks like between the bridge call boxes, the call box system upgrade that we just went through, and the call box site mitigation, we're spending about $9 million. And I'm just wondering what the trajectory is of the continued expected investment in the program and whether there might be a cheaper but more or equally effective way to go. I mean, we've got pretty deep cell phone penetration out there in the population, and, you know, putting up signs saying, hey, call if there's somebody broken down on the bridge, it seems to me could probably get at least as rapid a response. So where exactly are we in this?
I'll try and take a shot at that. I'm Melanie Crotty, Operations Section Director. As your comment said, we completed in the past year our first round of a pretty dramatic reduction in call boxes. It was primarily in urban areas and along the 880 corridor. We entirely removed the call boxes. We are in the stages of going with round two of call box reduction, so we will be coming. It probably makes sense with the SAFE budget update, since we're getting into the budget season, to come back with specifics on that. I do remind you, though, that we do need to do this in consultation with CHP and Caltrans. And in the past, CHP has had some concerns about too dramatic reductions, so there's always that negotiation that needs to occur. But I assure you that staff is being as aggressive as we can in the reduction. We expect that the ultimate configuration will be primarily in rural areas and then in some key spots in urban area where there's known notorious bad cell coverage and or some clear safety concerns. So that's where we're headed. Obviously, in the long term, there will be some cost savings. There is also, though, a kind of a minimum threshold of fixed costs that the program will always incur as long as we have a call box out there. To the second part of your question regarding technology, right now the SAFE program, which is the fund source for this, does require call boxes. That's in the statute. Some other regions in the past, and we have supported that, have tried to get that language changed to make it more a more open, eligible process where it's motorist aid, not call boxes
right.
Specifically. That hasn't happened yet. I understand that Kern County is sponsoring some legislation in this legislative cycle to, again, try and make a crack at that so that we can look more expansively at technologies.
Great. Thank you, Melanie. Appreciate it.
It's an information item, Commissioner Liccardo, so we don't even have to approve it.
I take back
it,
my motion.
But we appreciate your interest in the matter, and undoubtedly we'll be hearing about this in the Legislative Committee as the year rolls on. So thank you for that report. We actually have finally got through the consent calendar. You'll all be pleased to know, and that brings us to agenda item number 3. This is an overview of shared mobility services. This is an informational item. This was at the request of commissioners who wanted to have a briefing on the status of technology innovations in transportation, and specifically mentioned shared transportation services. So with that, and also recognizing that the hour is marching on, Ms. Crotty, if you could give us a succinct report on this matter. You have a full presentation available in front of you.
Thank you, Chair McKenzie. And I will do my best to be brief given the time, and we'll probably skip a number of slides, and if there's questions at the end, I'd be happy to answer them offline. So as Chair McKenzie said, that the sharing economy is getting a lot of attention and buzz. That, you know, Airbnb is one example of a shared economy. Another big one is Uber, and that is getting a lot of attention in the press. Some commissioners asked to have a briefing about what is going on in this sector. It's primarily being driven by the financed by the private sector, being delivered by the private sector, and really, to date, MTC hasn't really had much of a role. I would comment, based on the last committee meeting about access and transit service delivery, in the future there certainly is a potential for complementary services here. It also does, it's something to, that I, staff definitely would recommend that we keep our eye on. Most of these concepts are familiar transportation services. It's really adding the ingredients of innovation and smartphones that is taking a familiar concept and trying to provide it in a new and better way. The way we're defining shared mobility services is it's on-demand, app-based ride services. So you're using your smartphone, you get something immediately, and there is a true service that's provided to the public. And if you look at the slide I have up on the screen right now in the Venn diagram, the key intersections are the services that are getting a lot of attention from the media, Uber being the symbol with the U, Lyft and Sidecar, and then also the familiar Karma program. The key thing here is that there is an opportunity for improved mobility for customers, but there is also, I think, a lot that's not known about these services, and it does raise some public policy questions that I will pose at the end. So, to kind of just dive right into the question about Uber, what is it exactly? First of all, the media calls it ride sharing, so that I think does add some cause for confusion. In the transportation sector, ride sharing typically means carpooling, and what Uber does is really closer to taxi cab service, and so it's really the modern version of taxis. In addition to Uber, there's the Pink Mustache, which is Lyft, and Sidecar. The taxi cab industry is trying to get in the game. They were caught off guard, and I think really had somewhat of the market stolen from them. In the past year, there's a number of apps that provide e-hailing for cab services, Curb, Flywheel, Get My Taxi, to name a few. And then lastly, I'd note, it's not just the kind of Ubers. There are other kind of specialized services that are providing unique needs for rides to the airport, special qualified drivers for children and for seniors. The next service category to mention is following the transportation sector definition of ride sharing, or more colloquially, casual carpooling. We've been doing that for a long time. With the introduction and advent of smartphones, it can change casual carpooling into dynamic ride sharing. The 501 program has partnered with Karma through the Climate Initiatives Program to deliver a dynamic ride service in the Bay Area, and many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with that. In addition, Uber, Lyft, and Sidecar all introduced this summer tools within their service where their travelers could identify if they have a common destination and share a ride for a discounted price. So others are getting into this business as well. The next one is car sharing. Again, this is a familiar concept. It's been around for 20 years in the Bay Area. I would say this one is probably what's going on. There's a lot of exciting things on the business model front with car sharing, especially for company-owned fleets. A couple of the large international car rentals, Enterprise and Hertz, are both getting into the car sharing business. As well, interestingly, some automobile manufacturers are getting into one-way car sharing. Car2Go is a service that's being offered by Daimler, not yet available in the Bay Area, but supposedly coming soon. And then DriveNow is in partnership with BMW. So that the fact that they're looking at a services model, I think, is quite interesting. And then in addition, the fact that car sharing has typically been a round trip, the new idea on the table is really exploring one way where you can start at a certain point and then just drop off the car at your destination. Interesting, again, because that starts getting into real competition with transit. It's something to keep your eye on. The other piece of car sharing is peer-to-peer vehicle rental. This is there are two services in the Bay Area, Relay Rides and Get Around. Both of these are examples where you can register as a member, and if you have a car that you don't use that much, you can then have short-term rental for other people to use it and make a little bit of money. The next service, again, a familiar concept, jitneys. We've had jitney service in the Bay Area and certainly in other parts of the world very expansively used. What this really is privately funded, privately operated transit. We're familiar with the Google Bus and Facebook. That's not this. This is publicly available transit services. The biggest one in the region right now is RidePal. They are running 30 commuter buses right now all over the Bay Area and primarily with the destination of Silicon Valley. There are other services. Some are crowdsourced. Others have dynamic transit routing. They all have kind of a special strength that they're trying to exploit. The motto of RidePal is interesting. It's Google Bus for the rest of us. The next one, again, familiar concept, bike sharing. With the advent of mobile apps, though, you can now start to have peer-to-peer bike sharing. So that means that Bay Area bike shares may have some competition. The one that's available right now is called Spinlister. Another small program is Scoot, where they have about 50 scooters that you can use on a per-hour rental. And another one that I didn't mention here is that there's Park at My House, where people can start renting out their driveway through an app and get paid parking. I won't talk much about this, but clearly there's a lot going on in innovation, and there's a market niche or an opportunity for service aggregators. It can be overwhelming, all these different choices, so there's a business there for trying to organize that. But then again, there's a lot of them. So I would say that the market is still finding itself. There's going to be winners and losers. The ones that we show up here on this slide, they all have kind of, again, their kind of strength or something special that they're doing that they think will make them stand out. And I would add that 501 has some of these, but these are slightly different from what 501 is doing. So again, in the interest of time, I'll just kind of skip through this slide. This next slide, Frontier Group released a survey just last week doing an index of the number of service providers amongst the top cities in the United States. The fact that the red bar is not that different across the different cities says to me that service providers are trying to get out there kind of evenly, have a national service. The green bar is the number of providers for a certain type, so that would be like the number of ride-hail services. So the Bay Area has the most diversity within a service sector, but Austin has a greater diversity of service types. But, you know, this is something, as I said, the market's still finding itself, I would conjecture. I'm going to go through a survey that was done by the UC Transportation Sustainability Center really quickly. It's the only survey that we know of in the United States that have been done of riders that use these services. I think the pie chart is probably the most interesting piece. It shows that of about 350 people that just got out of an Uber or Lyft car, they did a clipboard survey to ask them about their trip decisions. A third of them said that if this service wasn't available, they would have taken a cab. So cab industry is right. They're getting some of their market taken from them. Another third said they would have taken transit. And 8% said they would not have made the trip, which I think is also interesting from a potential for induced demand, that people are getting a mobility, which is a good thing, but what does that mean for if we're trying to manage VMT? This next slide about public transit analysis, that the key point here is that they're finding is that, kind of no surprise, these are faster than transit, about 10 minutes average faster in length or quicker. this slide is really kind of just asking the question about, is this part of a larger trend of early adoptions by millennials and different kind of transportation trip habits? As mentioned in the last meeting, they have fewer driver's license. They're owning less vehicles. Is it part of that trend? And I think that, I don't know, this slide's not coming up. Oh, I'm sorry. Just quickly, this organization is really trying to ask the questions about what potential public policy issues we might be facing with the introduction of all these innovative and potentially disruptive services. I won't go through them. I think you're familiar with them. And then lastly, I think the question really before us today that we had hoped to discuss was really what MTC's potential role could or should be in interacting with these services. We certainly will be looking to exploit the best of class as part of the next generation of our rideshare and 511 programs. I think there's some consideration for pilots. That may make sense. Haven't mentioned anything about autonomous vehicles or connected vehicles, but there is a technology convergence that we expect, and we'll be back to talk with you later. I think there are other important questions that we could, if we had better data, and that's something that we're going to try and do to see if we can kind of crack open some better relationships with these services to understand who and how people are using the services. And lastly, there is a question about its relationship with transit, if we want to try and influence that. I'm sorry I spoke so quickly. I hope if there's any questions, be happy to answer.
Before any questions, I would like to acknowledge a speaker card from Mr. Fisher on this item. Mr. Fisher, if you would like to address us.
Sure. Again, for the record, my name is Clarence Fisher. My only question and concern would be that whatever role that MTC takes, that if you would allow whatever partnership you develop for payment of these fares to give incentive to those operators if they can accept payments via the Clipper card.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Any other comments?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Oops. Sorry, I'm looking the wrong direction. Doreen and then Mr. Campos.
I'm just wondering, Melanie, what information do you have about the effect that that these overall programs are having on people with disabilities who are not able to take advantage of ride shares, of sharing rides with people in regular traditional passenger cars or even trucks or vans?
Right now, we have no information on that. There is so little data on this. There certainly has been discussions and questions asked about that. The taxi cab business is heavily regulated, and there are certain provisions, of course, about ADA accessible vehicles. Right now, the data we really have is on the use of those taxi cabs. The ride-hailing industry is very lightly regulated right now, but certainly is under heavy scrutiny by the CPUC, and this issue is a consideration that, as part of their discussion. But they may have data, but it's not publicly available.
I understand. I think that it's really important for us as a region to, as an MTC, to look into this subject and see. I'm understanding that it's become fairly problematic in, especially in the San Francisco area, where vehicles that traditional taxi cab companies have that are accessible are kind of sitting idle while everybody is taking advantage of, you know, Uber and Lyft and that sort of thing. I understand that there was some discussion of the state requiring rideshare companies to own fleets of wheelchair-accessible cars. There was an article about that last year in a San Francisco paper, and I'm just kind of wondering if we can find out more about what it is that is happening or what needs to happen to make sure that people can still get around. Thanks.
Certainly, we can do some more research into that and get back to this committee.
Thank you.
If I can just say a little bit, one more thing. In addition to the issue about people using wheelchairs, I'm understanding that there have been significant issues with people who are visually impaired, who have guide dogs, or people who have service animals who make appointments with things like Uber and rideshare, and then are just left waiting because the person decides they don't want a dog in their vehicle, and so just drives by. It's not just people in wheelchairs. There's a number of things that have affected the disability community in this area.
Thank you very much. Mr. Campos?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I would simply ask, following up on what our colleague was saying, I would like to know more information about who is regulating what, if anything, here, and specifically what role the California PUC is playing, because I think it's actually very minimal. I actually have a problem with the whole concept of this so-called sharing economy, because sharing usually implies that there is no profit involved, but the reality is that profit is, underlying everything that happens here. People are not sharing. People are charging for something. But I do think it's important for us as a regional body to really understand the extent or lack of regulations, because I do think that this is impacting a number of communities, and some communities, like the disabled community, disproportionately are being left out. So there are issues of liability and other things that need to be looked into. But I think that getting more information on what regulatory scheme is out there would be very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I just would add that we will be coming back with follow-up from this day's session in the months to come. I would say that I've just received another speaker card from Jane Kramer on this particular item. If Ms. Kramer would come forward, please, and address the committee, I'd appreciate it.
The beginnings of an idea that's just beginning to twirl around in my head. MTC is putting together kind of a geographic location data program where on any given issue as far as housing or transportation goes, I can get on my computer and find out exactly who lives exactly where. I can pinpoint things exactly. So what is occurring to me is if you want to build a sense of community and you want to use that to enable people to get around, then maybe you can include the idea in this locator system that here's a group of people who have a car and they don't use it, for instance, most of the time, and they don't mind picking someone up or loaning their car to someone in case of an emergency or whatever. It's just a thought that's floating around.
Thank you very much. And there is another idea that is floating around and, in fact, has been executed in Petaluma. One example, a virtual village where, in fact, there is a consortium of people who do need assistance and help in various ways, including driving, and they form themselves into this combine and then make themselves available by telephone and other means of communication. I appreciate that comment. I believe that we've concluded that item.
Can I make it?
Oh, sorry.
I'm sorry. No, I don't mean to prolong things. I'm very interested in this peer-to-peer vehicle rental. That's something that I'm not aware of. Is that, I guess you... And the insurance issues and all those things are taken into consideration. And I would be interested in knowing more about that, because that is an incredible resource that suddenly becomes available. And so I would love to know more about that. And also, I'm wondering, you know, there's the other thing that's happening is that a lot of people now are instead of going out and using their car to go to lunch, they're actually using these services where they bring lunch to you, right? I'm just wondering what the impacts of that are relative. You know, and it's also, as we move forward, I don't know if it's this committee or what, but I'm really interested in this figure that where 8% drop in people, young people getting driving cars and car ownership. So it would be interesting, those trends, to try to figure out and make them as more as we can San Francisco specific, San Francisco region specific. So a lot to look at. Peer-to-peer, interested in that, and also what's happening with our young people here and also this other group of transportation that's being provided.
Thank you, Commissioner Bates. Having just attended the New Partners in Smart Growth Conference and a session on how cities and localities are using metadata, the new data sets, I think we have huge challenges ahead of us, as has been demonstrated by this report. And furthermore, at that conference, I did have an opportunity to talk to Mike Kazarak from Mountain View, who was telling me what it's like to live with Google in a community where requests for 5 million square feet of office space have just come before the council, where they're dealing with private rapid transit, where they're dealing with these various bus systems, where they're dealing with the fact that the 25,000 Google employees do not go out to pay for their lunch because they all get a free lunch. So there's a myriad of questions that are generated by the discussion that we've had this morning, and they're all going to have an impact on our business of dealing with transportation in the nine Bay Area counties. So, Melanie, thank you very much for this report. We will be coming back with more on this and proposals. I have one final speaker card here under public comment, agenda item number 4. Mr. Fisher, please.
Thank you for the record. Again, my name is Clarence Fisher, and I have two concerns I'd like to bring up. First of all, on your 511 transit site, getting from point A to point B, I think we need dual station names for BART. For example, a lot of people call 12th Street 12th Street, but you can't find it by 12th Street. It's only listed as Oakland City Center. Same thing for Pleasant Hill. Some people call it Pleasant Hill. Others call it Contra Costa Centre. I would hope that at some point both of these sets would be included in the 511 finder. Lastly, I want to bring up a concern as I am a travel trainer for the disabled community. I'm being asked a lot of questions of why is there a lot of discrimination about fares and passes. Example, AC Transit, they have an adult Transbay pass, not the disabled community. Muni, they have an adult pass that you can ride San Francisco, Muni, and BART within San Francisco. The disabled community does not. There is an adult BART Plus. There is not in the disabled community. Vine, Route 29. Adults pay full fare, but the disabled community does not get a discount for cash fare. Westcat and Contra Costa County, there's an adult pass to ride four different systems for a fixed monthly fee. The disabled community does not have a discounted pass of the same nature. Since MTC gives out these funds to these operators, I would hope that some point, now that there's Clipper available, that through maybe a year or so startup, that MTC tells these operators that you have to develop passes for the disabled community for equalization. Otherwise, I feel it's a discrimination, just as back as in the old days when you used to have people discriminated against on other reasons. I would hope MTC would bring the disabled community with these passes too. Thank you.
Thank you for these remarks, Mr. Fisher. My concluding remark today is to thank Andy Fremier and Brian Gephardt and Derek Toops, who came up to give a presentation to the Smart Workshop this week, the reason being that we will be, I believe, the final transit agency in the Bay Area, which will be converting to Clipper and then immediately starting to have to think about Clipper 2 or 2.0 or whatever the hell we call it. And the points you made are ones to be considered, but I did want to make sure that I thanked Andy Vermeer and staff for an excellent presentation and holding our feet to the fire on the smart board. With that, Friday the 13th comes again next month, and we'll all be here, and this meeting's adjourned. Thanks a lot.